Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the productive middle and have on the productive left, Shireen Gourvani.
Hello, and hey, listeners. Thanks for tuning in.
And we got to say the productive right, don't we, John? John Dougal, State Auditor.
Hey, great to be with you.
You too. I'm an avid soccer fan. It's my avocation. I grew up playing soccer, played for 25 years. I love soccer. Everyone asks, where'd you play? I started up top, moved to the midfield, ended my career back. That's what a lot of players do as they age. But I love the FIFA World Cup. But boy, does it have problems.
Yeah. So just outline some of the problems for us.
Well, I mean, it's in, it's being hosted in the Middle East, in Qatar or Qatar, depending on how you want to say it. Usually it's midsummer. They have it in November because of the heat in the Middle East. But they've got problems with human rights abuses, the migrant workers that built the facilities. They've got problems in an Arab world where they frown upon alcohol and sponsorships with Budweiser and serving beer at the games. And they have problems with LGBTQ issues. Have you read any of it, Shireen?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been following this since the decision was made because I think it's absolutely bonkers that it's in Qatar. And also, to anyone who's interested, there's been a lot of really fantastic reporting about really the corruption at the heart of FIFA that resulted in Qatar winning the World Cup. It is a wild story. But also, when you think about just the total lack of infrastructure that had to be built and on the backs of many migrant workers, I think the number that I read is over 500 died in the process.
Wow.
So
not like one or two. Every death's important, but wow.
Human rights abuses and real safety concerns. And then also thinking about just the, I guess you've addressed many of the issues, but there's also things like, people. So we just had this horrific shooting and for other reasons, people want to draw attention to and offer their support to the LGBTQ community and are not wearing, armbands that might symbolize that because of fears of what might be happening kind of in the broader context of the government and the leadership there. And I think all of it is just it's terrible, and part of it that's so terrible for me is there's almost no sporting event that I like to watch more.
Okay. John, do you watch the World Cup?
No.
Okay.
What's soccer?
Yeah, I got to get you to watch this because I filled out my brackets on Friday or Saturday morning, and it touches every corner of the planet. That's what makes it so magical. And it's not just, the—
Well, and it dwarfs the Super Bowl and the playoffs, that we think is so big.
The second most watched sporting event in the world is the World Cup draw.
Wow.
So the final's the most watched.
So tell folks, what's the draw?
Just when they pick what group you're in because you see what teams you play and you get your, odds of winning. But what makes it so special is it brings the entire planet together and brings all those cultures to the field. And you play for your country.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so it's not like professional sports. It's more like
More like the Olympics.
Patriotism, citizenship, yeah. But what observation would you make about the games and some of the scandals being in the Middle East and these headwinds?
Well, I think you always have the dynamic. I mean, first of all, I'll just straight up admit, these days I rarely have time for any sports, doesn't matter what it is. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things when you're doing the Olympics or you're doing something like the FIFA World Cup, you're playing in an array of different countries. And there are things that you're going to agree with and things you're going to disagree with. And if we're trying to build a stronger, if you will, sense of community, brotherhood, whatever word you want to use around the nation or around the world, you're going to be in nations that you don't agree with some of those dynamics. And how do you deal with that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of those challenges. And how do you celebrate the sport and the athleticism and the talent and dedication at the same time coping with things that you seriously disagree with? And there's, I think, two forms of thought, which is one, avoid it, stigmatize it, and try and drive change that way. And the other is to go into those countries and to try and change it from the inside by participating there.
Mm-hmm.
And so clearly, I think folks are hoping that by participating there, they'll change some of the dynamics in Qatar and bring about change that we're talking about.
Yeah, I mentioned off air that I had a productive middle kind of stance on this, and that is I like that the world is spending time in Qatar. I like that we're engaging. I like that those fans are seeing the world. And I think that it breaks down barriers. It's the Arab world meeting modernity. And I think that can only be good.
And the rest of the world understanding what is the Middle East. What is their history? Because for a lot of us, we don't even know what the history is.
You have a perspective here. John and I are both agreeing here that it's better for us to engage even if we don't agree with everything.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly would say that's generally my philosophy as a person who's more interested in diplomacy and, you know, relationship building. I just also, like, going all the way back, if there was a time machine, the way that this was selected is deeply problematic. And there's lots of problems, I think, in FIFA more broadly. But I do think that it's important to bring people together to have these kinds of celebrations and encounters. I do also believe that there should be a line where a deep violation of human rights and abuse and death needs to be part of the transparency and conversation. And I don't know, I struggle with all of it.
Yeah.
And I think the Olympics kind of raises similar questions too when we think about some of the stuff that happened in Sochi and in Russia. When we think about the cost to communities, the people who are displaced, when we think about even the future that bringing the Olympics here might result in. I think there's a lot of people who are very pro-Olympics as well. And I totally agree. Like, what a cool celebration. It's hard not to get excited about it. But when we're kind of trying to balance these bigger global issues, it's hard to know exactly what to say and do. But I know that this feels wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to twist this a little bit. You know, corporate America, we look askance at certain activities in the U.S. And yet when they engage with countries that embrace those activities, like in China, we don't even seem to care about it. You know, human rights violations in China, it's like, man, it's just the cost of doing business there. Mm-hmm. Where over here, we would never put up with those kind of dynamics.
Same thing with environmental standards, yeah.
Right.
Shireen, since you brought up the Olympics, so our state is in what they call a continuous dialogue with the IOC. That's what they call the process, a continuous dialogue. I would love our listeners to know Catherine Rainey Norman. She's an Olympic athlete that leads our Olympic effort. She's fabulous. But we had, 50 minutes this week to make our case?
Not 60 minutes.
Yeah, 50. The USOC, spoke on behalf of Salt Lake City. Governor Cox, made the case that we're a state of sport and that Utahns support the games. Mayor Mendenhall talked about sustainability. Lindsey Vonn, Olympic athlete, talked about the athletic engagement. And then, of course, Fraser Bullock doing his part about budget and whatnot. John?
And for a lot of folks, Fraser was the new number two guy.
To
Mitt Romney at the 2002 Olympics. That is who Fraser Bullock is.
I don't know whether we should predict things here. Are you generally supportive of what's going on here, John?
Well, I get that folks are wanting to recreate the magic of the 2002 Olympics. I jokingly tell folks the sequel's never as good as the original and stuff
there's
like
a
that.
Risk.
There's a risk to that.
Yeah.
And there's a part of me that's like, I want to just bask in the beauty of the 2002 Olympics and never forget that. I get that a lot of folks are passionate about this.
How do you respond to the fact that there's a whole bunch of Utahns that didn't get to experience that? I mean, like my son is one that my daughter remembers that my son doesn't.
Right.
Shireen, I don't know. You've got a beautiful young son.
Yeah, I would love. Okay, this one's tough for me because I'm a little anti-Olympics. I feel like there's
why do you hate?
I know. What is my problem? Okay, but I will say I would love to see a greater reutilization and reinvigoration of existing infrastructure. And I do think that's a reason that Salt Lake City should be considered. And I think that's a good thing about it. But we know that there's immense cost that happens to these communities and often huge displacements that happen along with them. But the fact that we have so much, I would love to see it used again. So it's a tension for me.
Credit our country for coming, for the USOC for not picking, Reno, Nevada or Denver, Colorado or somewhere else. They're coming back.
Right.
Because our facility's there.
But let me give an interesting twist. I can remember back. Do you know Damon Lill's Steakhouse that used to be on North Temple?
Prime Rib. That's what they were known for.
And I went in there. And it was literally the week before the Olympics. And they were so excited about all the business they were going to do and everything else like that. And then I went in a week or two into the Olympics, and it was very restricted. They had basically a buffet line. You could help yourself. And they just weren't doing the business because people weren't leaving the venues. And so they had their high hopes of what was going to happen to their business. And it was pretty much dashed as a result.
Well, we need to get them some better business consulting. We can help them with that.
Yeah.
Hey, before we go to break, I want to ask about, Shireen, we'll start with you since it's Nancy Pelosi. She was the first woman House Speaker. She stepped down as the Democratic leadership after 2 decades in that role. Do you respect this decision? Is it something that you would have advised her to do?
Oh, wow. So I don't feel like I'm in a position to give advice to Nancy
just,
Pelosi.
This is just the three of us talking.
I have to say, I am incredibly grateful for her leadership. I continue to believe that it is important for us to see people who look like us in positions of power, and it's nice mm-hmm. to have had her there. I'm grateful for pulling together and leading a very diverse caucus mm-hmm. with lots of different kind of takes on what being a Democrat means. She led people through some incredibly monumental legislation, including for me one that's near and dear to my heart, the ACA, passing of Obamacare, along with the biggest environmental investment that we've seen, you know, in my lifetime, certainly. She is an incredible leader, and I'm grateful for that. I am also grateful for her decision to step down.
Interesting. You know, John, in her quote, she said, "For me, the hour has come for a new generation to lead the Democratic caucus." Mitch McConnell over on our side did not make that decision. He's going the distance and staying in power, beating back a challenge from Florida's Rick Scott. And I would have preferred to see Scott take the reins, John.
Well, let me walk you through. I mean, you know, Pelosi 82, Biden 80, McConnell 80, Trump 76. I come from the perspective which is, okay, you guys, great. You had a fine history, whatever. Move on. Move on. I mean, this is a point in life where you should be celebrating other things. And there's certainly we need to move on to a new generation from my perspective. Yeah. So I think she will be unique, you know, in history. And while I disagree with a lot of her policies, she definitely showed how to use power to drive an agenda in her caucus. And you mentioned Obamacare, which many probably should call it Pelosi Care, given what she did and how she pushed that over the line. And I disagree with that. But that's what she did.
Yeah. Well, we need to take a break. In our next segment, we'll talk about a sobering conversation about Club Q Nightclub, but some better news about the Respect for Marriage Act. So stay tuned, everyone.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle.
Natalie, Shireen, I want to ask you a question. Coming off what we were just talking about.
Okay.
Tell me your thoughts on the aging leadership in the federal government. What are your thoughts?
So this will probably come as no surprise to you, but I have less concerns about the age of our leaders and greater concern about the economic divide that we have when we think about the number of millionaires, people with extreme wealth serving in government, in especially in Congress, versus what most Americans face every day. I would love to see more kind of working class people having access to being able to run for, representative for Senate. But that's not the world that we live in. And I think that it deeply skews our politics in a way. I can get into the age conversation if you'd like, but my greater concern is the economic reality that those individuals live in and basically what everybody else experiences.
Yeah. John, I don't want to be guilty of ageism, but I'll make a couple of observations. David Brooks once said that the U.S. Senate is like a writer's colony. They get elected to the U.S. Senate and then they write books. You know, I don't think that's the best use of their time. It's been an honor for me at times to have breakfast in the Senate dining room. It's a really instructive experience because a lot of the senators have their breakfast in there and you get a sense of the demographic we're talking about, but you also get a sense of the people they're meeting with. And then finally, maybe it's a bad joke, but they say that the Senate floor smells like Bengay and bad cologne. So, you know, would it be nice to have a refresh in the United States Senate? I don't think it hurts. That's why over time I've become a fan of term limits. It would make for a more dynamic and younger body.
Well, do you know why they wrote books or why they write books?
Please.
Because that's one of the things that they're allowed to do to earn extra money on the side.
Huh.
Tom Coburn, uh-huh. I think he was out of Oklahoma. I mean, he was delivered babies. And when he was in the House, he'd go home on the weekends and deliver babies. He came to the Senate and they basically said, that's a conflict of interest. You can't do that.
Wow.
And he basically said, well, then throw me out.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Well, boy. We come to this program in mourning because of the Club Q nightclub shooting in a neighboring state. Five people died. I don't remember if it was 17, 19 injured.
Too many.
Yeah, too many. And yet again, we all celebrate Richard Fierro, the retired military veteran that confronted and disarmed the shooter. Victims, Daniel Aston, Raymond Green Vance, Kelly Loving, Ashley Paw, and Derek Rump. John, you're, you know, let's just go to you first and just, I think the angle here is, what do we do about this?
I don't know. This is one of those things where I tell folks, no matter how much you disagree with someone, violence is not the way to deal with it. Mm-hmm. Voice your concerns, live your life the way you choose to live it. But attacking innocent folks, and I don't know what was motivating him, mm-hmm. but, you know, you could look and say it was animus for their lifestyle or violence against people, whatever it might be.
You could say he's provoked. You could say he's provoked by
whatever the reason is, sure could. Yeah. This is not the way to go about dealing with those kind of situations.
Yeah. Shereen?
So, yeah, I'm having a hard time with this one mm-hmm. because I feel like I'm in a place that's pretty angry. When I think about, first disclose, I spend a lot of time and prefer to be in the company in queer spaces. I really enjoy, you know, taking in drag shows in our community. And I would highly recommend if people haven't had the joy of being in a drag audience, please, you know, find time in your world to expose yourself to that. But it is a space that has been a home to me. Mm-hmm. And I just am like so deeply frustrated with especially political people on the right in the GOP who are offering thoughts and prayers in this moment when we are seeing over this last year 340 pieces of anti-LGBTQ legislation introduced across this country, 25 that passed, including in our own state, targeting. And part of all of that is this larger narrative that we're seeing, I would say typically on the far right, but it is in some cases very mainstream, accusing members of this community of grooming children, places actually talking about introducing mm-hmm. legislation to ban drag shows, right? Mm-hmm. The discourse that is happening has real life consequences that you just alluded to. Mm-hmm. When we think about the governor's race in Colorado, the Republican challenger very often maligned and, you know, specifically said, I think, deeply harmful and concerning things about the LGBTQ community. This violence does not happen in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see, I guess, if, you know, we can talk about, is it mental health? Is it guns? Is it, you
know, political speech?
What I see is a party that has a lot of power mm-hmm. that's unwilling to really act on a lot of those things.
Interesting point.
And that's where I'm pretty frustrated.
Yeah, about the power. My husband said to me, the LDS Church has issued a statement on this. And I thought, that's interesting because, you know, I didn't realize that there was a direct intersection. But I guess on a Facebook page, the mother of the 22-year-old alleged perpetrator disclosed that they were members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And then the church did confirm that this perpetrator is on the rolls of the LDS Church. I don't know what that means except to say that there was this interesting Utah connection, especially with when it goes to where I'm going to go next, and that is the journey that the LDS Church leadership has been on when it comes to LGBTQ issues.
Yeah, in particular marriage.
Yeah. And so, so everyone was shocked when they came out in support of the Respect for Marriage Act. John, you saw that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Patrick Mason, a Mormon scholar, works at USU. He's got a piece in the Salt Lake Tribune, an op-ed where he talks about the journey of the LDS faith in this. He goes back further, but 2008 and Prop 8 in California, 2015 when the same-sex marriage, became legal, 2018 when the LDS Church had their apostate policy, then by 2019 they reversed it, and now they're very much in what he calls a dance with the secular state. Mm. John, you and I are both members of the faith, but it's been interesting to watch this. You spoke about power. This is a powerful part of our society that is on a journey that is moving towards more belonging, inclusion, acceptance, love. Your thoughts. I think I'm sharing my thoughts by just the tone of my voice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the first things, just from my perspective, stepping all the way back, and there's a debate about marriage and stuff like that. I come from the perspective, which is I don't believe government should be in the marriage business at all. this is something between consenting adults, let them choose how they want to live their life and stuff like that. The government shouldn't be putting its thumbs on the scale one way or the other. And so that's philosophically where I come from. And so you look back at the dynamics in California, this was trying to get the government to put its thumbs on the scale one way versus another way and stuff like that. And
just so remind our listeners, so who would be the sanctioning entity for two consenting adults to come into a contract with each other?
Well, I mean, historically, it was their families and those individuals. They're choosing to do it of their own volition. And so this is associations, churches, religious, whatever it might be. Yeah. They're the ones choosing to do it. I mean, I tell folks, I remind folks, when
I— It gets interesting when you talk about like insurance benefits and, you know—
Yeah, but when I form a company, I'm not really asking permission for the government to start a business.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And so there's this interesting dynamic. Okay. And so I come from that perspective.
This is the libertarian small L.
Yeah, yeah. And so I just, and so we've tried to contort ourselves as a result of this and that and the other, what is and isn't appropriate. And I do find it interesting that we're now saying gay marriage largely is okay, but anybody else that deviates from quote unquote traditional or quote unquote gay one person with one person kind of, you know, two people will form a couple. Anything that deviates from that is unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And I find a certain inconsistency in that discussion. Yeah. If we're trying to say,
we're all on a journey
let
here.
Consulting adults choose how they want to live their life, then why are we getting wound up?
So,
but we shouldn't be picking and choosing. This is favored for certain government benefits and this one is disfavored or other things like that.
So, John and Shereen, there's an interesting dynamic here going on between our two senators, Senator Romney, Senator Lee. Senator Romney has been a leader in my opinion when it comes to the Respect for Marriage Act. He has this quote where he says, it signals that Congress and I esteem and love all of our fellow Americans equally. That's a beautiful quotation.
Yeah.
Senator Lee, I don't know a lot about it, but I did see a tweet where he talked about why he didn't support it, and he called it the bill anemic and illusory, which was sort of, I don't know.
I think it's just Mike Lee. And I mean, that's
just language more... like I'm smart.
Yeah, with like very little, compassion, leadership.
But once again, John, our two senators canceled each other's vote.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, you're the one that one time I said Romney cancels Lee's vote, and you said no, Lee cancels Romney. Who is it?
They each cancel each other.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, we also had a Sunday, a Transgender Day of Remembrance at the City and County Building. Governor Cox issued a statement. Mayor Mendenhall, said some things. We had 323 flags representing a transgender person who was murdered or died by suicide in the past year in the United States.
Yeah.
Shereen?
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. And like I said, I think we have to, I would like for us to sooner rather than later see a real reckoning with our leadership that continues to pass bills that continue to target and marginalize the trans community. I don't know if you're out there and listening and you're trans, I'm sorry. I love you. You have a place in this world, and I'm frustrated by some of our political leadership that is seems unable to create a bridge to understanding.
Mm. I'll just say from the political middle and from the bottom of my heart, let's find more compassion, empathy, and care in life.
Well, we all struggle with challenges and difficulties and heartbreak and.
And we
I think we need to be more understanding of all folks.
And we could do a lot to make life easier for people, right?
Yeah. Hey, difficult transition here. President Cockett has resigned from Utah State University. Mm-hmm. I always hate it when we have these changes at our major universities.
Well, you're so close to higher ed.
Yeah,
so
it's a hard job. But I just wanted to say, I think President Cockett has been a terrific leader. I'm a real fan of some of the things she's done in higher ed.
What was driving the change?
It's all tied up in some of the controversies with the USU football team, and just a gut feel that she probably figured out that there's some other ways she'd want to spend her time.
Well, that's a travesty.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is.
And to me, academic is the
she's
primary
widely
thing.
Respected by faculty.
And too often sports trumps what's going on at the universities or distracts leadership where they could be focused on other, what I believe, higher priorities.
Right. Shereen, the trek at the Salt Lake City International Airport. Okay. KSL did a nice report that showed that it's a 0.64 miles to the farthest gate. Some people call it the Pioneer Trek. But they found that there's, I don't know, five or six airports with a longer walk, including one of your home airports,
okay.
Minneapolis.
So also, listeners, you may know that I grew up in Bismarck, North Dakota, and often that flight is at the very end. So
okay.
I have been running through the Minneapolis airport on many occasions trying to get to my gate, which feels like it is 10 or 15 miles away. But it is a much longer trek, my understanding, than what people experience at the Salt Lake Airport. And I have to say, I'm a fan of the new airport. I don't mind being able to walk around a bit before.
We need it.
Yeah, before you get onto a flight. I did track it myself one day to find out exactly how far it was. I do also see at an airport with so many young families moving in and out. My heart goes out to people who are trying to move kids through that airport.
I love the pilot who said, "I've taken you as far as I can today. You're going to have to walk the rest of the way."
Yeah.
And it's temporary, everyone. There's help is on its way. Okay, real quickly, John, we'll start with you. A political leader, public leader that you're thankful for this week at our week of Thanksgiving.
I'm going to say, while I disagree with his politics, I appreciate Jimmy Carter and his life of service. 98 years old, still serving.
I love that, John. He does a lot with Habitat for Humanity, if I recall. Shereen?
I'm going with Representative Liz Waite, who did not win a recent election, who is an incredible leader when we think about the words you just used, compassion, understanding, really deep community care. I'm grateful for Representative Liz Waite.
I'm going to go with two women for both the same reason. One, Liz Cheney, for the leadership, the lonely leadership, courageous leadership that she's shown in the U.S. House. And then for Nikki Haley for speaking up this week about how we need a Republican who can win. All right. Thanks, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving. John, you want to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving?
Hey, have a great Thanksgiving,
Shereen,
everyone.
Spend time with your family. Find ways to serve your community.
This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Thanks for listening, everybody.